You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcast on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio, and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network and DirecTV and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. Welcome. Well, let's see here. We are missing an airplane. We're still missing an airplane. Flight 370, Malaysian Airlines. Increasingly, people are starting to wonder if this might be suicide by pilot, as apparently an Egyptian airline plane went down that way some time back. But there was some speculation about this last night on Fox, and one of our associate producers watches Fox, so I don't have to. And said, whoa, Hannity was like all about, you know, be afraid, there's terrorists coming. And he had on this guest, Gavin McInnes, who was saying, yeah, geez, I hope it's terrorists. And so I thought, let's ask this guy to come on. Hey, Gavin, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Gavin McInnes, conservative commentator, columnist, author of several books, including the latest, The Death of Cool, his website, Street Boners, and TVCarnage.com. Gavin, why do you want this plane to be taken down by terrorists?
Well, let me just first say I'm not particularly proud of this emotion, but it's there. It's sort of like I used to know this black guy in Toronto, where I'm from, and his dad would watch the news, and he'd see some horrible crime going on, and he would say, please don't be a black guy, please don't be a black guy, please don't be a black guy. And I'm having a similar kind of instinct with this, just going, please be terrorist, please be terrorist, please be terrorist.
Why?
Because I think that America is asleep when it comes to the threat of Islam, and when it's something else that's a freak occurrence, then it allows the left to go off at tangents about, you know, Timothy McVeigh rednecks and Nazi skinheads and all these fake villains, which you see in Hollywood movies, right? It's always some evil Parisians or something.
Right. More than 90% of all the terrorist attacks in the United States, according to the FBI, have been done this is from 1980 until today, have been done by, well, let's see, Islamic extremists, 6%, Jewish extremists, 7%, extreme left-wing groups, 24%, communists, 5%, Latinos, 42%, and others, which presumably includes right-wing extremist groups, 16%.
What are we defining as a terrorist attack here?
Well, this is from the FBI's FBI report. Let's see.
Is the Batman shooting a terrorist attack? A terrorist attack to me is something that's...
Here we go. Of the more than 300 deaths from political violence and mass shootings, they're saying that it's when people die as a result of somebody with a political agenda, basically, or an agenda to cause people's behavior to change, as opposed to somebody just going postal in the workplace. I can read from it if you'd like, but I don't think that there's, you know, it's fairly straightforward.
So your contention is that in America, if we're scared of terrorism, Muslims should be at the bottom, near the bottom of the list.
That if you're scared of Islamic terrorism, either you have been, you know, reading the wrong stats, watching the wrong network, or you're just an uninformed coward.
What about globally?
I don't have stats globally, but I don't live globally. I live here in the United States. I mean, I travel globally, but I was in Mexico all last week. I wasn't running around looking for Muslims.
Are we not talking about Malaysia right now?
Yeah.
So global terrorism is something that apparently comes up once in a while here in America.
Well, there's a lot of Muslims in Malaysia. I've been there. I've been to Kuala Lumpur. They don't have so much of a terrorism problem. I mean, most of the world doesn't really have much of a terrorism problem. And in fact, I would argue that I think that if you were to talk to an Afghan or an Iraqi citizen, that they would say that the biggest terror problem that they've got is George W. Bush dropping bombs on them.
George W. Bush dropping bombs on them?
Yeah.
That's their biggest problem right now.
Well, the aftermath of that, of course. I mean, Afghanistan, before George Bush decided that he was going to bomb it, Afghanistan had a GDP of $2 billion a year. It was the second poorest country on earth. $2 billion a year. Bush, wisely, when he became president in March of 2001, you know, a month and a half, 2 months after he was sworn in, gave $60 million to the Taliban to nuke the poppy crop. Because there was so much cheap heroin going into Europe.
George W. Bush, that's the problem in Afghanistan right now, is George W. Bush?
And they did it. The Taliban took his money and they killed the poppy crop and, you know, life was good. And then 9/11 happened and the Taliban said, you can read this in the Washington Post, they said, if you want, we'll arrest Osama bin Laden for you. We've got him. We'll arrest him and we'll hand him over to a third country for trial. All you have to do is present the evidence. And Bush said, no, we don't want him. We'd rather bomb your country. We're spending $1 trillion.
Now,
in a country that had a GDP of $2 billion.
What is George W. Bush's fault? Isn't Obama the president right now?
Yeah, and he's winding down those wars. But this is...
What? He didn't add more troops to us. He started a whole new war. He's winding down those wars.
You're well, we're not in Iraq anymore, are we?
Of born-again Christians.
You're not in Iraq anymore, are we?
We still have troops in Iraq.
Well, we have a few hundred. But the point is that the people of Iraq and Afghanistan are living through hell. As a consequence of American terrorism.
I don't like the idea of foreign intervention, but you can't deny that no one kills more Muslims than Muslims. And in this,
I can deny that right now. I'll tell you that you know we have killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghans is the word for citizens. We've killed them. I mean, you know, the statistics are there for anybody to look at.
Attack on Muslims. We've had 200 jihad attacks globally this month. We've had about 1,500 dead bodies this month.
I'm quaking in my boots. Do you sleep under your bed?
Yes.
I mean, seriously. What, do you walk down the street, Gavin, looking over your shoulder constantly? Come on, grow a pair.
You're correct that statistically the odds of me being killed by a terrorist are infinitesimally small.
The odds of you being killed by a terrorist as of today are 17,000. You're 17,600 times more likely to die of heart disease. Maybe you should sleep with a stethoscope. You're 12,500 times more likely to die from cancer. You should be inspecting your skin every minute. You're 11,000 times more likely to die in an airplane accident than from a terrorist plot. You're 1,048 times more likely to die in a car accident.
No one is saying that terrorists are going to get us. No one is walking down the street living in fear of terrorism.
More people were killed last year in the United States by televisions falling on their head than by terrorists.
We're criticizing extremist Islam. That doesn't mean that you are living in fear that it's going to happen to you tomorrow. On September
11th, hoping it will.
In New York City, the odds of you dying were infinitesimal.
You're hoping it will. And you know, I get it on Fox. You know, they're sucking up to the big corporations. You've got all these defense contractors that make, you know, I mean, it's like half our defense budget is going to defense contractors that are keeping us safe from terrorism with new and better weapons and new and better spying on us. And I get, you know, why right-wingers shill for them, particularly right-wingers in Congress, and some Democrats, too. But I don't understand why you would.
In this intro that you don't watch Fox and you're telling me what it's all about, there's plenty of what you would call isolationists at Fox, plenty of the paleocons.
Then why are you shilling for these big defense contractors by ginning up fear of a largely non-existent threat?
If we're looking at global issues and attacks, which news tends to do...
But we're not.
Islam has some serious culpability. If you want to talk about an average guy's day-to-day, well...
Why wouldn't you hope that the plane was taken down by an equipment failure or by a crazy pilot?
We're talking about Malaysia right now, and you're saying, why are people talking about this stuff?
No, I'm saying, why are you saying that you hope it's Islamic terrorists?
Because it has to be someone... And I want it to be indicative of a general global pattern, which is jihad going bananas.
Okay, I'll leave you with the last word. Gavin McGinnis, conservative commentator, columnist, author of several books, including The Death of Wolf. Gavin, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with, the Financial Times. Again, the economy is... Well, I got to tell you that in a second. And welcome back. Nate Sweet on the line with us, producer of The Big Picture, and sometimes fill-in guest. Hey, your host.
Yeah, people might recognize me.
Hey, Nate. Yeah, you're actually, I should... International star of the small screen, Nate Sweet.
having talking head, yeah.
Indeed, having appeared in over 104 countries. Tonight on the Big Picture Politics panel.
All right, we got Shelby Emmett, Ben Cohen, and Huey Newsom on the show.
Shelby is a newbie?
Yeah, they're both from Project 21. We'll be talking, just one segment panel today. We'll be talking about Dianne Feinstein's remarks about the CIA today. We'll be talking about a plan in Vermont to create a public bank sort of on the similar lines as North Dakota has. And we'll also be talking about, House Democrats filing a discharge petition to get a vote on unemployment benefits, the extension of unemployment benefits.
Cool. And in Block B, Robert Perry's going to come on. I want to dig into the Ukraine a little bit. I don't know if you noticed, I asked Sean to put a couple of new links.
Yeah, I didn't see those.
Okay, good. One having to do with Chevron and the deal that they cut back.
Yeah, that was the Nafiz Ahmad thing.
Pardon?
That was the Nafiz Ahmad piece.
I think.
Yeah, he's good. We've had him on the show before about talking about Syria and the role pipeline strategy has to play in the Syria conflict. It was probably one of the better pieces I've read so far, talking about the role that conflicts over oil have affected the Ukraine crisis.
I really think that if Ukraine wasn't sitting on billions of dollars worth of shale gas and oil that could be fracked out right now, and if it wasn't the spot that a pipeline runs across to take oil and gas from Russia to Europe, that but instead they grew turnips. That nobody in America would know where it is or what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very fair analysis. I mean, oil politics have always played a role in Ukrainian and Russian relations. I don't know if people remember a couple years ago, Russia actually shut off oil reserves.
It was natural gas.
Shut off the pipelines. And, it's a constant conflict, but it really, I think, like most conflicts in the world, it narrows down to natural resources, and one of the most valuable is oil.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting conversation. Speaking of oil, for our green report in Block C, we're going to talk about leaving fossil fuels in the ground.
Yeah, this guy John Fullerton, from the president of the Capital Institute, he thinks that's a more financially valid solution than monetizing the fossil fuels that exist in the ground right now.
Right.
And he's also going to be talking about the carbon tax, part of our ongoing series of carbon tax analysis. So hopefully get his opinion on that as well.
Yeah, this should be very interesting. He's basically saying that to these fossil fuel companies that are booking hundreds of billions of dollars worth of carbon that's in the ground on their balance sheets as assets, that they need to write them off. That's pretty radical stuff. And today is the anniversary of Fukushima.
It is. It's the three-year anniversary. We'll have David Lochbaum from he's a nuclear engineer and director at the Nuclear Safety Project. With the Union of Concerned Scientists, he'll be on to talk about sort of a broad range of issues regarding the three-year anniversary. As a lot of people know, the first waves of the Fukushima plume are hitting the West Coast right now. They've started. Sort of we'll get his take on that. He will also get his take on whether or not Fukushima is the cleanup has been at all successful. There's more evidence that the operator, that TEPCO, may have dumped more radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. So just sort of a general update on where things stand and what the future of nuclear power really is.
Yeah. And our daily take, Rick Perry killed an innocent man.
Yeah, it's sort of Rick Perry, there's growing evidence that Texas executed an innocent man, and it's going to be a call for an end to the death penalty.
Yeah. Would you make sure that the phrase, may God have mercy on his soul, is in that daily take? I forgot to double check.
We'll do that.
Thank you, Nate.
All right.
Great talking with you.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll see you tonight. It's 20 minutes past the hour. You are 8 times more likely to die from accidental electrocution than a terrorist attack. You're 8 times more likely to be killed by a police officer than a terrorist. Jeez. So we should all be afraid? Well, maybe some of us. CDC says 80,000 deaths are attributable to excessive alcohol use. That's 4,706 times. You're 4,000 times more likely to drink yourself to death than to die from terrorism. 32,000 automobile accidents last year. You're 1,900 times more likely. Yeah. Anyway, I think we can safely set that aside. Bernie Sanders held a hearing, the Senate panel chaired by Senator Sanders. This I got, I subscribed to the Bernie Buzz, which you can get over at sanders.senate.gov. And what the U.S. healthcare system can learn from other countries. He says the U.S. spends 3 times more on healthcare than other industrialized countries. More than France, Germany, Denmark, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, Norway, Taiwan, Israel. I mean, the list goes on and on. And these are all countries with world-class healthcare systems. We spend more. Do we get good results from that? The French, he says, have easy access to primary health care as well as specialty services at half the per-person cost of what we spend in the United States. Half. China achieved health outcomes that are equal at least to those of the U.S. at two-thirds the cost, according to Dr. Danielle Martin of Women's College Hospital in Toronto, who testified before Senator Sanders' hearing. And what do we get out of this? We're 26th in life expectancy. We're number 26. We spend the most. We've got the richest healthcare CEOs in the world. But in outcomes, we're number 26. People live longer than the United States, than Americans. They live longer in Italy, Spain, France, Australia, Israel, Norway, and several other countries. Well, you know, 23 other countries, I guess, 25 other countries, whatever it is, 26 altogether. So I wanted to share that with you. But this, there's, now let me get a little, just a little financial wonky on you. And then after the break at the bottom of the hour, I'll pick up your phone. I see some people who want to get in on the my conversation with our first guest about, you know, we should all be afraid of Muslim terrorists. And, you know, Dianne Feinstein. Boy, that was amazing. Goes to the floor of the Senate and just, boy, she's upset. I mean, she's sort of in charge of the committee that, I believe she's one of the head honchos of the Intelligence Committee that has oversight of the CIA and the NSA. And when she learned that they were spying on her, maybe there's hell to pay. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. I'm glad it struck home. But let me tell you about something. This, you know, I keep finding these pieces in the Financial Times, and I remember back in 2006. And those of you who have been listening to this show for at least, what would it be, 7 years since 2006, however long that is, for at least that long, we've been on the air since 2003. Those of you who have been listening to the show since then know that in 2006 I started warning people that a crash was coming because the housing starts fell off. And also, you just look out there and you see, I was seeing debt explode. I was seeing, you know, corporate governance falling apart. The banks had been deregulated. Just it, if you've read the crash of 2016, you know the whole scenario that brings this about. And one of the things, and I wrote about this in Rebooting the American Dream. There's a third of a chapter devoted to this. One of the things that Reagan did that set up the Great Crash that's still in place is he did away with the ban on paying executives with stock. Used to be you couldn't pay your CEO or your senior executives with stock. You had to pay them with cash. They had to take a salary. And then there this idea came along that people like Steve Forbes and, you know, other billionaires have been pushing for some time, that you want the CEO, that there are a bunch of stakeholders in a corporation. There are obviously the shareholders. There is the management team. There are the workers, and there are the customers. And then arguably there's a fifth shareholder, which is society as a whole, the nation, the community, the environment. This is another set of shareholders. And so what the Steve Forbes crowd was saying is if you only pay the CEO a salary, the CEO is going to be responsive to the customers, to the employees, to the community, to the management, the rest of the management team, and to the shareholders. But the shareholders actually own the company. I mean, Steve Forbes obviously is a shareholder in a lot of companies. Shareholders own the company, so really you want the CEO to just be dancing to their tune. Right? This is libertarian capitalism writ large. The CEO's job is to represent the interests of the people who own the company, after all. So in order to make that CEO care more about the shareholders' interests than about the employees' interests or about society's interests or about the customers' interests or the other employees' interests, let's pay the CEO with stock. And then the CEO is going to do everything he can to jack the stock price up. Because if the stock price goes up, the CEO gets rich. Pay him with stock options. You get 100,000 shares of stock this year, and you can exercise those options. Let's say the stock's at 10 bucks right now. So you can buy those shares at $10 anytime over the next 10 years. So if you can jack that price of that stock up to $15 and sell it, you make a 50% profit on it. And you only pay 20% income tax on it because it's a capital gain. So Reagan changed the rules, the IRS rules, so that companies could compensate their CEOs with stock. And they started doing that. And CEOs started working to the benefit of stockholders. Well, this piece by Andrew Smithers in today's Financial Times is titled A World Awash with Debt. Points out that corporate debt is at an all-time high that we haven't seen since 1930. And he said, in the UK and the US, the reason for this is quite simple. Companies have been leveraging up to buy back their stock, their equity. Why would they do that? He says companies in the US prefer to buy back shares rather than invest in equipment, in other words, rather than growing their company, because their management are paid huge bonuses which are boosted by buybacks and held back by investment. In other words, as long as you're paying the CEOs with stock, they're going to buy back the company, they're going to have the company buy back its stock, which makes the stock more valuable, rather than invest in their company.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
The net of this is that this policy that Reagan put into place is causing CEOs to act against the interests of everybody except the stockholders and setting up the next crash. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A place where despair is not an option. Oh, my computer just came back. Sort of. Yeah. Oh, well. Strange things happen. You know, what can you say? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Isaac Asimov on anti-intellectualism. That's a good thing to talk about over in the chat room. Chris in Bothell, Washington. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, it kind of immediately is sort of that came to mind me when, you know, this Malaysian Air flight had sort of disappeared. I kind of was thinking back to TWA Flight 800 and how, you know, it was kind of a, you know, it mysteriously had sort of blown up and sort of, you know, went off the radar of the eyewitness accounts. I mean, it was, you know, called in fairly quick. My conspiracy on this is that since it, you know, it was over the South China Sea, that it wouldn't be entirely inconceivable for me to think that perhaps it could have been like they might have been doing some missile testing and, you know, might have blown up the aircraft, and that the Chinese government might have already, you know, been down there in the scene and grabbed the black box, and they're already sort of trying to create a narrative based on, oh, we found the black box, you know, kind of like what a lot of people believe the U.S. did with TWA Flight 800, that I think...
Now, TWA Flight 800 was the one that a lot of people alleged they saw surface-to-air missile take down over New York, right? Off the coast of New York?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they thought that it, you know, could have been some sort of government cover-up, that initially it seemed like the NTSB, there were some whistleblowers after the fact that said, hey, it seemed like the FBI was sort of directing this away from a criminal investigation more. It's like they were sort of said, do you think it could be inconceivable that the Chinese could have been, you know, we could look at a similar that situation?
I don't, you know, I'm skeptical about that, but you never know. I mean, they're saying that it looks like the plane might have flown west and it could have flown for several hours. I mean, one guy said it could have flown all the way to India. They've extended the search area now on the other side of Malaysia, off into the Straits of Malacca. That area is, you know, not so deep, but they're going out farther into where, you know, the water's 5,000 feet deep. That's a mile deep. And so that would make that might account for why they're not hearing the black box, because you get in water that deep and you've got to be virtually on top of the thing to hear it pinging. But who knows, Chris? I'm not going to speculate. I don't have a pet theory, and I don't feel real strongly about this one. Like I remember when TWA 800 went down, and I'm pretty sure we were on the air at that time, and there were these people who were saying, "Hey, I saw it." There was a bunch of them, and that's pretty hard to ignore. But to the best of my knowledge, there have been no eyewitnesses come forward. No, you know, we're just getting confused information from the airline and from the controllers. So, Chris, thanks for the call. Feel free to call in with your favorite theory, but I don't have one. Paul, in Woodinville, Washington, you have a short version of our guest's comments?
I sure hope reality conforms to my ideology.
Ah, yes.
I mean, Tom, this guy was the epitome of the right wing. Let me give you some examples.
Sure.
And therefore, this is the insane part, was he was afraid that if it wasn't what he wanted, would it be what the left would think about what it was that he didn't want it to be?
Right.
I mean, that's a twisted way. But look how they're going. Let me give you some examples here. this is the right wing. Corporations, I want those to be people. Money, I want that to be speech. Christianity, I want that to be tough love. You go right on. Green eggs and ham, I want that to mean Obamacare stinks and so you don't have to have it.
Right.
Regardless of the fact that nobody in the Republican Party seems to have been able to finish the book. I mean.
Yes. Yes, actually. Because in the end, he likes green eggs and ham, unlike Ted Cruz.
I understand now why long legislative bills are hard for him. A 62-page children's book that's mostly pictures is too long for them to finish. So
I understand. Yeah, I'm with you, Paul. And did you see where this woman who is in the Koch brothers ad that is being run all over the place to say Obamacare is evil? And she says, I have leukemia. I'm going to die. My insurance got canceled because it was crummy insurance. And Obamacare is going to cost me more. And then people come to her. The New York Times went to her, apparently, and said, it's actually not going to cost you more. And the new policy that you have, which apparently she has, is lower deductible and costs you less because of Obamacare. Are you ready to retract your statement? And she said, I don't believe it, even though she has it. In other words, I don't believe reality. And turns out her husband was or was something like that, some kind of big Republican consultant or elected official or something.
Because it doesn't conform to her ideology.
Exactly.
People who can't look. And by the way, her junk insurance probably wouldn't have covered her leukemia anyway. They would have canceled her.
Certainly a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, would have or could have, but almost certainly would have. Paul, excellent point. Thanks a lot for the call. It's a variation on the don't confuse me with facts. I very well said. Gary in Reddick, Illinois, listening to WCPG. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, Tom, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
You know, that first guy, that guest caller you had in, just I'm wondering if he was sitting in his mom's basement just trembling when he called into your show.
He's not here to defend himself. Let's not pick on people too viciously.
Understandable. Agreed.
No, I beat him up, or I said some fairly strong things to him, and he took them with good grace. I have to give him that. You know, it's
He did.
So let's acknowledge him for having the you know, Hannity wouldn't come on this show. I mean, you know, let's acknowledge him for having the courage to come on the program anyway.
Sure. Fair enough. Did I hear him correctly when he said that basically? People like Timothy McVeigh are fake villains, though. Did I hear that correctly?
I think he's not here to say what he meant, but I've heard this before, this narrative before from people on the right, that when those of us on the left say, you know, the second largest terrorist attack in the history of the United States was done by a right-wing conservative militia member, Tim McVeigh, who may or may not have been motivated as well by Christianity, certainly was motivated by reading the Turner Diaries, in which, you know, the good Christians kill everybody else, including the Jews and as I recall, even though some of the Catholics, and that is somehow ginning up a fake terror threat. But the fact of the matter is that there are actually right wing terrorists in this country. I mean, the Atlanta. I was living in Atlanta when it happened. The Atlanta bombing of the Olympics was a right wing terrorist.
It just blew my mind. I just couldn't believe it. You know, he listed off those, and I thought I had to have heard it wrong.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, you know, how could you hope for one thing that is probably not even the case?
Yeah. Well, I'm not hoping for it to be a right-wing terrorist or any other kind of terrorist. I'm hoping that, you know, it's the failure of some piece in the airplane that they can figure out really quickly and fix so that no other airplanes go down. I mean, that seems to me like the best worst-case scenario. Either that or you had a suicidal pilot or something like that, you know, which is like has happened before. But I mean, you know, then you select your airlines more carefully or whatever. But Gary, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening and being a first time caller. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sam, how you doing, my friend?
Hey there, bro. Hey, you know, how many ways were they going to use the word terror? I mean, if it's a verb, they want to use it that way. I mean, anything to scare American people seems like to take away from the main issue of things.
Well, it doesn't just distract. It also makes them an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, that 777 jumbo jet, they've been having a lot of problems with electrical systems in them. They put more battery in.
No, I think that's the 787 you're thinking of. That's the new Dreamliner, the new giant one. The 777 they rolled out about 15 years ago, as I recall, 14... years ago. But and it actually has a pretty good history. I've flown on them a bunch of times. In fact, it seems like every time I go to Europe, I'm on one of these 777s. They're a nice airplane. But
well, I'll tell you what terror is. Huntington down here, they got the commission was offered one of them armored vehicles left over from over in the war.
Uh-huh.
And the people in Huntington said they didn't want that. They wanted to spend the money on something else.
Right.
And they was voting it down in Charleston. You know, it's about 50 miles away, said... But the commission said, we'll go in with you on it to buy it. And they purchased. Now, that's terror.
Incredible. Well, that's leaving behind the unemployed and the people who are, you know, homeless and who are hungry and who don't have health care and everything else. It's tragic. Sam, thanks for the call. It's always great to hear from you. Frank in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was just wondering, I've heard a number of people now propose that perhaps this was terror-related. But I cannot understand for the life of me why anyone would think that, because there would be nothing to be gained by them taking out a plane from a small country out over the middle of the ocean where it does no harm like the ones on 9/11 did. What would there be for them to gain from that?
And not claiming credit for it. That's the. I mean, we're 4 days out now, and typically when terror groups, whether it was the old IRA or whether it's Al-Qaeda, you know, when terror groups blow things up, you know, a couple days out, they release some kind of video or something saying, hey, we did it. We're the big shot here. And be afraid of us.
And there's been no claims, and there's just nothing to be gained.
Yeah, there's nothing, which makes me think that there's an innocuous, or innocuous is the wrong word, but, you know, that this was unintentional, or if it was intentional, it was, you know, a pilot who has snapped.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Frank. And if the pilot is snapped, then I think the things that they need to look at are, particularly since that pilot was from Malaysia, had he recently traveled to a part of the world where malaria was endemic and he had to take this new drug over the last 5-10 years that they give for malaria that causes psychosis. I mean, this is a common consequence of taking this drug. Was he on that? Or was he taking a lot of sleeping pills for jet lag? And that'll make, you know, some people crazy. I mean, is there some rational explanation here? Let's look for that first.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or did, you know, the pitot tube blow off, or, you know, the fuel line ice up? Or is it something that we can figure out and fix in future versions? Shano's slogan, Fox News, where Occam's razor goes to die. It's perfect. Richard in Lebanon, Missouri, watching Free Speech TV on the Direct TV satellite. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, I want to comment about the way Republicans are going after Obama on this Ukraine thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like President Putin of Russia, I'm sure he watches all of our TV shows or has advisors to tell us this or tell him what's going on with the Congress. And from day one, when the Republican says he will be a one-term president, we will not work with him, and they've kept that promise. And when Putin sees that, he sees weakness in our country. So why can't our Congress and our Senate get together and see that that's the problem, and it's not Obama, it's their way of thinking?
Well, I don't disagree that the Republican, the unyielding Republican opposition to President Obama over these last 6 years has not just weakened but damaged our country. And there's an op-ed in today's New York Times that lays that out, that just basically says that. I don't think that President Putin much cares whether President Obama is succeeding with his domestic agenda or his international efforts or not. You know, what's got me scratching my head is, what is our strategic interest in Ukraine? Why do we care? Now, what I do know is that last November, Reuters reported that Chevron struck a $10 billion natural gas deal with the government of Ukraine to go in and explore for and frack for natural gas and oil in Ukraine. Because apparently Ukraine is sitting on a giant shelf of shale that you can frack gas and oil out of. And, you know, it doesn't have oil wells like Saudi Arabia. And up until the last decade or so, that those fossil fuels wouldn't have been recoverable. But now they are. And so we've got an American company that has a multi-billion-dollar interest in that part of the world. And those kind of things, you know, when American companies have multi-billion dollar interests in any part of the world, suddenly those interests start getting a whole lot more political attention as those companies start lobbying politicians. And I'd like to know what's going on between Chevron and our members of Congress and Chevron and our media. If anything, you know, Chevron and interlocking boards of directors, are there other corporations, other natural gas and oil companies that also have deals with Ukraine for fracking? You know, what's going on with that? We're going to talk with Robert Perry about that on the TV show tonight. I find it fascinating. I think
does
if they,
the Koch brothers have anything to do with that?
I doubt it. I think that, you know, their father made all their initial money. I mean, they got rich the old-fashioned way. They inherited it. But their father made all his money with Joe Stalin. And back in the 40s and 50s, you know, over developing the oil fields of just east of Russia in the Stan countries. And then he came back to America and started the John Birch Society, claiming he had seen communism and he was horrified by it. But I think that they have the Koch brothers have been keeping their attention more domestically focused than internationally since then. But I could be wrong. That's the kind of question you put to people like Lee Fong, who, you know, keep up with what's going on with the Koch brothers. Richard, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, the Senate, Democrats in the Senate last night held an all-night talkathon on global warming. I wanted to mention that. And in the House of Representatives right now, Democrats are working to get a discharge petition passed. This requires 216 signatures, if I'm remembering my math right. And that allows the members of the House of Representatives to bring forward a piece of legislation even when the Speaker of the House does not like it. Right now, the only way that you can get a vote in the House of Representatives on a piece of legislation is if the Speaker, in this case John Boehner, if the Speaker says, okay, fine, let's have a vote, and bangs his gavel and puts it before the members. But you can go around the Speaker if you get 216 votes, which is an absolute majority? 218. Is that an absolute majority? Do you know? It's like a majority plus one. Okay, 218 votes. So the Democrats can't do it alone. The Democrats are like 13, 17, something like that, votes short of a majority in the House of Representatives. So they would have to get 17, 18, 19, 20, whatever, Republicans to go along with them on this. And this is to extend long-term unemployment benefits. Because John Boehner does not want to extend long-term unemployment benefits, because the longer people hurt and the worse the economy is, the better it is for the Republicans. At least this is the math that they're doing in their heads. If they can cause pain, people will blame Obama for it. And so in the House of Representatives, they're refusing to bring to the floor for a vote whether to extend long-term unemployment benefits and even make it retroactive back to Christmas. So people will get a fairly large check and they can pay down their house mortgage that's gone ballistic over the last 2 months. We're going on 3 months now. However they're going to do it, right? The Democrats have a 6-month proposal. The Republicans were talking about a 5-month proposal, but they still wouldn't bring it up for a vote. And over in the Senate, the Republicans filibustered it. They actually had a successful vote in the Senate. It got more than 50 votes, but it didn't get more than 60 votes. So the Republicans successfully filibustered extending long-term unemployment benefits in the Senate, which is really, really tragic. So, anyhow, and the senators last night had this all-night talkathon about global warming, which was really cool. One of the senators who didn't participate was Mary Landrieu. She is from, what, Mississippi, Alabama? Louisiana, thank you. She's from Louisiana, a state that is heavily in bed with the natural gas and oil industry, heavily dependent upon BP and other companies like that. And so, you know, talking about carbon taxes and global warming and things is not popular in Louisiana. So she didn't participate. But the Republicans are now criticizing her for participating anyway, right? She didn't do it, so they're just going to make it up. Joe in Colorado Springs, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Joe, you're an airplane mechanic, right? An aircraft mechanic?
Yeah, and I've been following this situation with the 777 with great interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some other examples of where airplanes just disappeared and people wondered what happened to them. And when they finally got the pieces put back together, three occasions that I can recall, the airplane lost control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the worst disaster in aviation history was when a Japanese 747 was flying at altitude and the rear bulkhead blew out. This was a factory-installed repair on a 747, and the 747 was equipped so that it would maximize, absolutely maximize, the number of people that they could get on board because there was a pilgrimage to a holy site in Japan.
Hmm.
And the plane, in this particular instance, after the hydraulic system was completely made inoperative, just continued on straight until it ran into a mountain. And people were, you know, making notes to their loved ones. And it was horrible, absolutely the worst aviation catastrophe. And this plane, this 777, you know, if I had my guesses, lost control. And it could be that the pilot and co-pilot weren't able to communicate because the plane just, you know, maybe it went into a steep dive and the plane was at such an awkward angle and it was going so fast that no one could communicate. They were on the ceiling, literally.
Yeah.
And they couldn't communicate.
Yeah, that's although their transponder was turned off, apparently. And so that argues for a catastrophic electrical failure, does it not?
It could be. It's everybody's guessing at this.
But there's two backup systems for the electrical system on a 777, and then there's a third backup system that is basically batteries that has nothing to do with the two primary backup systems. So there's triple redundancy. It seems like if they wanted electricity to that transponder, they could have gotten it there. And
yeah,
so,
well, there's triple redundancy on the 747 hydraulic system too, and it blew out all three systems.
Wow. Of course, it took out a chunk of the mainframe to do that.
It blew out the rear bulkhead. It didn't take out the mainframe. Now, there are two other instances. One where the empennage flew off of it was a 737, I believe.
No, you're thinking of the DC-9 over Chicago?
No. This was a different one. The empennage flew off the back, and the whole tail section blew off.
Uh-huh.
They checked it over and they found out that the rivets were overstressed and the whole rear section blew off.
Right.
So they didn't have any control over the airplane. The other one was lost over, it was flight out of South America.
Yeah. Well, the net is that, you know, catastrophic equipment failure is a very real possibility. Joe, thank you for the call and for pointing that out. And let's just, you know, let's hold in a band. Scott in Littleton, Colorado, listening on AM 760. We got just a minute to the end of this hour, Scott. You had a quick comment you wanted to make?
Real quick, yeah. When you had your guest on about the incident, he had said something about an African-American friend who, whenever saw somebody on the news, he said, hope it's not a black guy, hope it's not a black guy, hope it's not a black guy, because he didn't want to be stereotyped as a criminal.
Right.
And this guy's point is he wants it to be a terrorist, so all Muslims or anybody from the Middle East is automatically described as a terrorist.
Yeah, I almost pointed that out to him, and then I thought that the logic associated with that might exceed his, that basically what he was calling for was the opposite of what his black friend was calling for, you know.
It didn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah, it didn't. It's, and you're right. I mean, so he's saying, you know, let's have more profiling, let's have more stereotypes, let's have more awful stuff in. Yeah, good point. Scott, thanks a lot for calling. It's coming up on 4 o'clock here on the East Coast at the top of the hour. And up next, well, I want to get into this seven quotes and tweets you can't miss from the Senate's all-nighter on climate change. I want to try to explain what Andrew Smithers said in the Financial Times one more time. I kind of jammed into that. And we'll pick up your calls.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Bridget Ann Kelly going to court in New Jersey. Oh, man. It's like, okay, I get it. You know, Christie's corrupt. New Jersey politics is corrupt. And he might be our next president. Who knows? It's bizarre. Today is the third anniversary of the tsunami and the earthquake, then tsunami, then knocking out the power over at Fukushima, then the nuclear plant starting to go into meltdown. Today is the third anniversary. And so I think it's a good time for us to look back and see what have we learned in these past 3 years? What has happened over these past 3 years? What's the state of Fukushima right now? What's the state of the Pacific Ocean and the west coast of the United States right now relative to that? And what's the state of nuclear power in the United States? It's a large stack of stuff to talk about when we've only got about 8 minutes till the break. But Kevin Camps is with us. He can do that kind of stuff. BeyondNuclear.org is the website. He's the radioactive waste watchdog there. Hey, Kevin, great to have you on again.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Good to see you. So you heard my list. You can start anywhere you'd like.
Well, the U.S. and Japanese nuclear establishments have learned not a darn thing in 3 years. The Abe administration in Japan wants to turn on the 48 remaining reactors in the country. Six were done in by this disaster, with four destroyed reactors, and two more at the site that they just won't even go there because the site's so contaminated. So they retired those two. They lost six. They got 48 left. Abe wants to start them back up over the objections of a majority of the Japanese people. They've prioritized that over dealing with the Fukushima Daiichi site and the ongoing catastrophe there. It's a really powerful form of denial that Abe is in. But the same can be said of the United States nuclear establishment. As Senator Markey from Massachusetts pointed out yesterday, not a single safety upgrade has yet been instituted in the United States in response to the Fukushima catastrophe. We have 31 reactors in this country that are either identical or very similar, these General Electric boiling water reactors of the Mark I and II designs. So it's an incredible disconnect between reality and this la-la land that the nuclear establishment lives in.
Now, one of the things that is absolutely necessary for a nuclear reactor to run, and frankly for an oil, gas, or coal electric generating system to run, is massive amounts of cold water to cool the reactors. We're having droughts across much of the United States, and many of those droughts are hitting areas where you've got large rivers that are being used to cool nuclear power plants. Nuclear power plants are typically sited on a river or on an ocean just so they can have access to that cooling water. Are we facing any problems with regard to that?
Yes, very much so. Groups around the country like Southern Alliance for Clean Energy in the drought-stricken Southeast, Civil Society Institute, and Burma Working Group at the national level have done reports on this issue. And, to give folks an idea of how much water you're talking about there, Tom, the two reactors on the Chesapeake Bay here in Maryland don't have cooling towers. They use a square mile of the bay to a depth of 14 feet on a daily basis to cool those two reactors. It's billions of gallons of water. And as you mentioned, it's not just seawater like in the Chesapeake Bay. It's also river water. It's also the Great Lakes. So this is one of the biggest, along with coal and fossil fuel, centralized thermal power. Nuclear power is one of the biggest single users of water in the United States.
Wow. Wow. And it was the loss of cooling water at Fukushima because the pumps that circulated the cooling water went out because the electricity went down and the backup generators were underwater. the loss of cooling water that caused the meltdown. Do we have reactors in the United States that could face problems or at least have to shut down, stop operating as a consequence of drought?
Well, there have been instances a few days here, a few days there, even on the Great Lakes where the water gets too warm. Even on Long Island Sound, which is connected to the ocean, the water gets too warm and it can't be used to efficiently run and cool a nuclear power plant. So they shut down until the temperatures go down. But something that's been revealed by whistleblowers at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is a very endangered species, believe you me, but, you know, praise to them for stepping up and pointing out that there are reactors in the United States, some three dozen, that are downstream of major dams in this country. And so the threat of an inland tsunami, if these dams break, those reactors at 34 different sites will be underwater, as bad as Fukushima Daiichi was, no cooling. That's just one disaster scenario of cooling loss to reactors. Any loss of the electric grid combined with the diesel generators, and you are in a station blackout, you are in a Fukushima situation.
So we have 34 potential Fukushimas here in the United States, at least.
Oh, at least. You've, of course, got seismic risks and tsunami risks at places like Diablo Canyon, California.
Right.
But ironically enough, and there is a going battle between NBC News and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on this one. The NRC's own documents show that Indian Point near New York City is probably the most at risk of seismic damage in this country because it was so badly built. They didn't even know the fault lines were nearby back in the 1960s. They do now. NRC is swearing up and down that NBC's got it wrong, and this battle has been going on for 3 years. NBC's got it right. The NRC itself has admitted that Indian Point is a disaster waiting to happen if an earthquake strikes nearby.
What's the status of the initial spillage of radioactive material into the Pacific from Fukushima arriving at the West Coast? And what's the status of the soldiers, or the sailors, rather, who were on the USS Ronald Reagan that was apparently off the coast of Fukushima at the time that that reactor was melting down and those reactors were exploding and things?
Well, it's interesting timing here on the third anniversary that the plume in the ocean is arriving at the West Coast of North America. So the likes of Ken Buselier at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute have estimated that already the Gulf of Alaska coastline of Canada is seeing cesium-134 from Fukushima. It's moving south. It'll hit Seattle as early as next month, certainly by summertime, and will move south from there, just given the way the currents are carrying it. So we're seeing that now, 3 years later. So that's a concern.
What about bioconcentration in the food chain? Or has anybody found cesium or strontium in the meat or bones of large fish yet?
Oh, yeah. The first documented cesium contamination in seafood was in bluefin tuna that were swimming off the coast of North America, the West Coast, in August of 2011. It only took them a few months to migrate across the Pacific. So bioconcentration, we're at the top of that food chain, unfortunately. The USS Ronald Reagan story is jaw-dropping. The number of plaintiffs now, sailors from the USS Reagan suing Tokyo Electric, is around 80. Major health damage, even birth defects in children that have born since the last 3 years to those sailors. And, you know, Tokyo Electric, years late, is admitting that the levels of radioactive discharge were multiple times what they had admitted to in the past. So that same dynamic of doubling or multiplied by five how much strontium-90 is getting in the ocean.
Wow.
And we're seeing ongoing releases. Just a couple weeks ago now, another 100 tons of overflow in the storage tank depot hit the ground, got in the groundwater, and likely flowed out into the Pacific. And the levels of strontium-90, which is a bone seeker, they're just off the charts bad. Highly radioactive wastewater. They're leaking on a fairly regular basis at Fukushima Daiichi.
So it's the leakage into the Pacific is ongoing and has been for 3 years. So if it's just hitting here right now, we can expect at least three more years of continuous increases. Does that make sense?
Every day, on a good day, 72,000 gallons of radioactive groundwater flowing into the Pacific. These leaks from the storage depot are in addition to that. So 100 tons here, 300 tons there.
Of what?
When the tempests were hitting Fukushima Daiichi, there was a lot of overflow from the highly radioactive wastewater storage.
Amazing. Kevin Camps, you can read all about it at beyondnuclear.org. Kevin, Thanks for the great work you do, and thanks for bringing us up to date today.
Thank you.
Always great to see you and to talk with you. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And by the way, we've turned off our radiation detectors in the Pacific Ocean, so we don't know, although there are volunteer things like at radcast.org. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And by the way, the Free Speech TV Network, if you're listening on Free Speech, some of you are listening on Pacifica stations, and if your Pacifica station is in a fundraising drive, please contact them and kick in, help out. But Free Speech TV is having their fundraising drive right now, and we're talking about it at the top and bottom of the hour. But please give them a call at 877-378-8669. Now, that said, let's get back to our regularly scheduled programming. Tom in Holyoke, Colorado, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Tom. You want to talk about Devil's Triangle?
Yes. I've been seeing on the UFO Files show that there is a Dragon's Triangle off of the coast of Asia that is supposed to have the same thing as our Bermuda Triangle, where USOs are undersea unidentified things
now,
come out there.
You know, I've seen a couple things about the Bermuda Triangle recently. One suggested that balls of fire and things that sailors used to report periodically, that could just be methane hydrates. You know, methane under the sea coming up and igniting. Others, there was actually a statistical analysis that was done 6 months ago or so suggesting that there's actually not an increase in missing ships. If you look at the ratio, the proportion of ships, you know, it's just an area that has very, very heavy traffic, so you have more losses. But if it's a loss per traffic incident, you know, per 100,000 ships going through you, it's no higher or lower than anywhere else in the world. Could it be that Dragon's Triangle is the same thing? It's just a heavily trafficked area, and therefore you have more ships lost?
Yeah, except that this was an airliner, and, you know, I can understand the surface of the ocean be affected by the bubbles or take the buoyancy away, but
right. What
they say is that these big bases that are underneath this area are, you know, a mile long or a mile across or whatever. You could land an airplane on them. They can come up and out and just, you know, do the old Star Trek thing and open up the doors, put a tractor beam on them and pull them in and take them back down. And
so, Tom, you think it might be, I mean, you seriously think it might be UFOs?
Yeah. I'm just saying, when it disappears like that and there's no slick in the ocean and there's no transponder, there's nothing, if there were UFO bases in that area and there has been more activity, it would be just as a viable operation, I mean a viable solution, as somebody took too much of malaria medicine and nosedived his plane into the water.
Sure.
But usually there's an oil slick.
Yeah. Well, it may be that they're just looking in the wrong place. That's one of the things they're thinking now. Maybe the plane flew to the west for, you know, some time, and which speaks poorly of their radar systems and of China's early warning against missiles kind of systems, I would think. But, you know, I don't know. Frankly, it would be cool if it was, I think, you know, if it was aliens. Because it would give the people of the world something to unite and freak out about, so we could stop saying, you know, oh, we're freaked out about Putin, or oh, we're freaked out about Al-Qaeda, or oh, we're freaked out about Muslims, or whatever. We could be freaked out about people who really are other than us, you know? It's like, it's a real other. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. Comcast throwing all kinds of money at Congress, apparently, to approve their merger. Because freedom, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, in Ocala, Florida, you have some thoughts on what might have happened. This is an interesting topic. It's starting to get... We just had a caller a few minutes ago suggesting that maybe there's a UFO base. Maybe there's an equivalent of the Bermuda Triangle, the Dragon's Triangle in Southeast Asia. and maybe it's a UFO base, and they grabbed this plane with a tractor beam. I just said, I hope so. You know, wouldn't it be cool if the world could unite against aliens instead of against each other? I think it was John Kennedy. It was one of our presidents made a comment to that effect. Maybe it was far more recent than that. In any case, Kevin, what are your thoughts on this?
Thanks for having me on. First of all, I just wanted to comment on the fear mongering that's been going on. I mean, obviously, with all the other craziness, you know, that our country's been involved in, it's easy for people to be paranoid with different conspiracy theories. But you have to admit there are some things that are fishy about this whole missing airplane thing. I mean, just simply the fact that they reported that a aircraft made a 180 turn, and it could have been cruising for about 150 miles at 35,000 feet with no engines, and also it had state-of-the-art electronics and backup systems. So with such a great safety record, it's kind of difficult to think that something, you know, other than foul play was involved here.
Yeah. Well, you've got the folks who kind of represent the airline industry, airline manufacturing, saying, oh, there's no way it could be catastrophic failure of the equipment. It must have been the pilot went nuts or something like that. And then you got the people who represent the pilots unions and the pilots saying, well, you know, it's probably unlikely the pilot went nuts. It could be that the airplane disintegrated or, you know, hit some turbulence or something like that. And I mean, everybody seems to have an axe to grind. That's mangling my metaphors here. I'm still liking the aliens theory.
that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, the guy was dead serious about it. I mean, I wonder how many Americans. I still remember when I was a little kid. I was like 7 years old. My dad showed me a UFO, and my memory of it is quite clear. And Nigel Peacock and I, Nigel's one of our webmasters. He lives in the UK, and he and I were driving around out near Stonehenge once back 10-15 years ago. And I've known Nigel since the 80s, or the early 80s. We used to run forums on CompuServe together, and before there was an internet. And we were driving around Stonehenge, and sure enough, there was something, you know, it goes zipping through the sky and then comes to a dead stop, makes a 90 degree turn and goes flying off. And it was like, what was that? You know, I mean, the dead stop part, right? This was not a jet. This was not a plane. And it was near Stonehenge, and it was a night, and it was weird. And so I there's probably an explanation for it. I just don't have any idea.
Well, a lot of people think there's an explanation for everything, you know, supernatural that happens, especially, you know, scientists and whatnot. Yeah. But just the fact that, they said that there was tampering with the radar and itinerary, and that there was also stolen passports. And these are all different things that drive conspiracy theorists nuts. And these are things that completely, you know, they start digging further into and start coming up with their own ideas.
I wonder how long it's going to be before David Icke issues a statement. We've tried to get him on the show a number of the times. He apparently thinks I'm going to pick on him. I'd love to do just a straight interview with him. I heard him speak, Louise and I heard him speak in person in California 15 years or more ago. We walked into a seminar, a workshop at a conference that I was speaking at. It was like an hour long talk, maybe a little longer. In the beginning, the first half of the talk, it was like this brilliant history of European history and currencies and religion. And it was fascinating. And then about halfway through the talk, he got into how the lizard people who zip on human suits are running the world. But it was like, so he had established so much credibility at that point. We were just like following along, and I almost had to shake my head like out of a trance and look around the room and say, whoa, people. Who knows? Maybe I would love to have David's take on this. And I wonder if he's going to issue a statement of some kind, and, you know, that, yes, it's the lizard people who are doing it. I don't know. Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. Elaine in Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, Elaine, you want to talk about nuclear power?
Oh, hey. Yeah, I was just really kind of fascinated with your – I got sidetracked with the discussion on the UFO issue. I'm a former air traffic controller, and being stationed in Puerto Rico in the 70s, I did see one up close about 500 feet flying over me on my way back to the base.
Whoa.
But
when you were driving or flying?
We live in an age of hubris where we actually believe that we're the only planet in this vast universe with what we call intelligent species, but judging by the way we behave, that's a questionable assumption that we're intelligent. But, having said that, my personal feeling on the whole UFO issue is religion will not allow such, real information on that to be disseminated or even believed. I mean, people are probably shaking their heads now saying, when you say UFO, it's like, okay, get the tinfoil hats, you're crazy, there's no way.
I don't think you're crazy. I've seen things I can't explain, and to think that we're alone in this universe, I think that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. That's hubris. But as far as the energy issue is concerned, I live in Alaska, and we are surrounded with geothermal. I mean, we're on the Triangle of Fire or the,
right. The Ring of Fire, it's called.
Activity, yeah. And we're stuck in this coal-burning, oil-burning, gas-burning system because they have all the money. They control the regulation. They control what is allowed to be developed. And we're behind so many other countries. I think it's Iceland that runs strictly on geothermal.
More than 95%. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's mind-boggling. You know, they have clean air, blah, blah, blah. But it's the old money that will not allow, they will suck the last ounce of petrol out of the ground, scrape it out.
And that old money may well be lizard people. Who knows? Elaine, thank you for the call. I absolutely agree with you. You made a brilliant point, particularly for Alaska. The same thing could be said for Wyoming. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And actually, that whole stretch of Yellowstone across the middle part of the western states, I mean, there's an enormous amount of geothermal. The good, the bad, and the very, very belatedly ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good. The Talkathon Senators. Last night, 28 U.S. senators stayed up all night to talk about one issue and one issue alone, global climate change. Some brought up personal anecdotes, others used fiction, but all took the time to say that now is the time to fight global warming. Here's what Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey had to say after reading a passage from Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
So to my colleagues here in the Senate and everyone watching and following tonight, thank you for caring a whole awful lot. Because it's not for us, it's for all the subsequent generations of this country and this planet that are looking to this chamber for the leadership. And we are going to make things better from tonight onward. This is a moment. The science is clear. The economics is clear. And now the politics is clear. We're going to have a big fight about this in 2014.
Well put. Let's just hope the rest of the Senate, especially Republicans, are listening to what Senator Markey and his 27 other Talkathon colleagues were saying. After all, the future of the human species is at stake. The bad, Mike Huckabee. In an interview in this month's issue of The New Republic, the former Arkansas governor said that he treats female candidates differently than he treats male candidates. He said, "I've run twice against woman opponents, and it's a very different kind of approach. For those of us who have some chivalry left, there's a level of respect. You treat some things as a special treasure. You treat other things as common." Huckabee added that women need a sense of pedestal. Could he get any more patronizing? If the Republican Party ever wants to shake off the war on women image, it needs people like Huckabee to shut their mouths or change their opinions. And the very, very ugly, Gymrex. The pharmaceutical company is taking criticism from all over social media today for refusing to give a 7-year-old cancer patient from North Carolina experimental medication that could save his life. Its reasoning? The compassionate use of the drug could, quote, place the entire development program at risk. Check it out.
Josh Hardy is in a fight for his life. This Fredericksburg first grader has beat cancer four times since he was 9 months old. But now he faces a new challenge, a virus he contracted after a January bone marrow transplant.
He is working his butt off.
Josh's mother is with him at a Memphis hospital where doctors have told her that a medicine currently in clinical trials could save him. Brincidofovir is an antiviral drug that is currently not on the market. In a statement today, the company said this is one of hundreds of requests that Chimerix has received for the compassionate use of brincidofovir. Providing brincidofovir in any of these situations could very likely place the entire program at risk.
In other words, Chimerix is more concerned about its profits than the life of a little boy, and that is very, very ugly. It's incredibly ugly. Okay, it was Reagan who said it. I have to share it with you. It was Reagan who says it. In fact, it's interesting. There's the whole dialogue of this. This was after it was disclosed that Nancy Reagan had followed horoscopes, and Reagan would never sign anything when Mercury was retrograde, and all that kind of stuff. Sort of like me. When Reagan was governor of California, he and Nancy apparently saw a UFO over a highway in near Hollywood. He talked about this on Steve Allen's show back in the day. But he first talked about this in 1985, December 4th, 1985, at a speech at Falston High School in Maryland. And according to the White House transcript, the official transcript, he was talking about his five-hour private discussion with President Gorbachev. And he said Gorbachev... He told Gorbachev to think, quote, how easy his task and mine might be in these meetings if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet outside in the universe. We forget all about the little local differences we have between our countries. I think Reagan was right. And then this article goes on, people didn't pay that much attention to it. But then Gorbachev confirmed that conversation in a very important speech he gave February 17, 1987 at the Grand Kremlin Palace in Moscow to the Central Committee of the USSR's Communist Party. That's not like speaking to a high school, right? And there, buried on page 7A of the Soviet Life Supplement, was the following statement, quote, at our meeting in Geneva, the U.S. president said that if the Earth faced an invasion by extraterrestrials, the United States and the Soviet Union would join forces to repel such an invasion. I shall not dispute the hypothesis, though I think it's early yet to worry about such an intrusion. So Gorbachev thought, well, yeah, okay, maybe. So then, toward the end of the speech, toward the 42nd session of the September 21st, 1987 General Assembly, this is Reagan talking to the UN. He said, in our obsession with antagonisms at the moment, we often forget how much it unites all the members of humanity. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet I ask, is not an alien force already among us? Reagan said this to the UN. And then he kind of backtracks. He says, what could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our people than war and the threat of war? Right. And then May 4th in Chicago, this is the third time Reagan talked about it. He said, a power from another planet, from space invaders. I've often wondered, again, he says this, what if all of us in the world discovered that we were threatened by a power from outer space, from another planet? The citizens of the world, he said, would come together to fight that particular threat. And there's a fourth reference by Reagan in an unofficial statement. It was published in the New Republic. It was reported in the New Republic, September 15, 1987. Near the end of his lunch with Shevardnadze, wrote Fred Barnes, senior editor of the New Republic at the time, Reagan wondered out loud what would happen if the world faced an alien threat from outer space. Don't you think the United States and the Soviet Union would be together? Shevardnadze said, yes, and we wouldn't need our defense ministers to meet. This is all from, a caller calling and going, I think it was aliens who took that plane in Malaysia. I don't know. Kenneth in Paintsville, Kentucky. Hey, Kenneth. Your thoughts on this?
Hello?
Should we be dusting off Ronald Reagan?
No, I don't have much for Mr. Reagan.
Okay, I'm with you.
But I'm the feller caught in there about you aliens.
Uh-huh.
I guess anything's possible. I don't want to say nothing against him or anything. That's the first time I've ever caught in on any show.
Mm-hmm.
But.
I did listen to the phone, not to the TV. There's a delay on the TV.
Let me turn it down.
Yeah, you got to turn it down. So what'd you want to say, Kenneth?
I think that the plane, because I was listening to another news channel a while ago, I don't know when there's any truth to it or not, they said the transponders in the airplane had been turned off.
Yeah, that either turned off or they lost power to them. And that's what we don't know. But, yeah, the transponders apparently just stopped working.
Yeah. Well, I hope them all the best. But, I mean, Mr. Reagan, he's not helped me any.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be rude and change confidence. But what's his name there on that farm bill?
Mm-hmm.
They hurt a poor man like me.
Yeah. You're talking about the Republicans?
Bernie Sanders is the only person, I may be biased, but he is the only man in that whole House or Senate that stands up for the poor people and the working people.
Yeah. Well, there's a few others who do, but he does, I think, better than all the rest. I'm with you. Kenneth, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Paintsville, Kentucky. Jim in Hillsboro, Oregon. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Tom. Am I on?
You are. Nuclear disasters? Volcanoes?
Let me turn off my speakerphone.
Okay.
And just talk to you normally.
Okay, thank you.
First of all, Tom, I think you're great, but don't worry. You're going to get better.
Well, thank you, Jim.
I wanted to talk about Fukushima.
Right.
Just a couple of quick points. As I looked on Google Earth, and, you know, that has a timeline feature, and you can go back in a few years.
I didn't
and
know
look
that.
At things.
Mm-hmm. So you looked at Fukushima a few years ago?
Yeah. And the one thing that you can see, and I'd recommend that people do this, is you can see the containers of, you know, the big drums that they put the wastewater in.
Right.
You can see them growing over time.
Right.
And they have cut down quite a bit of, forested area to put these things in. They're running out of room.
Yeah.
But my main point is I would like to recommend to folks to go and look up a movie.
Okay.
Akira Kurosawa. Kurosawa's Dreams. It was published in 1990.
Okay.
And one of the sequences, it was a dream sequence, it was just a fantasy, of course, was where he conflated the nuclear power plants with the explosive power of nuclear power with the volcanoes.
Well, they're not altogether dissimilar. I think that you could make that comparison.
But it's an incredible sequence, and it really exposes the thought, the thinking, the psyche, the drama.
Right. Very interesting. I'll have to check it out. Jim, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching. We'll be right back, 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is interesting. We've got callers talking about aliens, religion, UFOs. How it could happen, I never expected. Where's Eric Von Doniken when you need him? I think he's been dead for a couple of decades. Yeah. The Chariots of the Gods was his book, wasn't it? Yeah, as I recall. Diana in Portland, Maine, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Diana, you have a theory on the airplane?
Well, sort of. You've got this thing flying at 35,000 feet,
right,
at which point it's on autopilot. So even if the plane suddenly depressurized and everybody passed out and nobody was controlling the plane, it would still be going where it was supposed to be going.
Right.
Now, at 35,000 feet, if this thing took a massive lightning strike or there was some sort of massive explosion on board, I don't think you'd be looking for wreckage in one particular spot. From 35,000 feet, I think you'd be finding suitcases and seats and doors all over the freaking place.
I agree. It's 7 miles up, and if I'm doing my math right. And that's why they're thinking that the plane might have vanished off radar over the South China Sea or whatever that is, you know, to the east of Malaysia. But there is some evidence that it turned left to the west, and it had enough fuel to go 6 or 7 hours to the west. And so now they're starting to search the Straits of Malacca and the areas west of that going toward India.
And if it did explode, and I don't know how fast a 777 flies.
About 550 miles an hour.
The debris will flow to some extent in the same direction the plane is going.
Well, I think it'll be caught by the currents of the ocean. I've sailed through the Straits of Malacca, the area that they're looking at, and between Indonesia and Malaysia. And there's a lot of traffic in that area. There's a lot of boat traffic in that area. And so that's the thing that has me baffled. I'm thinking that this plane probably flew out to sea at least a few hundred miles and disintegrated or exploded or came down over the Indian Ocean. It came down over that or whatever the name of that ocean is. I'd have to look on a map, but
yeah.
West of the Straits of Malacca, over really, really deep water in an area that ships, because usually the ships stay fairly close to shore, you know, within 20, 30 miles of shore. They don't, you know, cut the line and go right through the middle of the deep water because A, there's pirates out there sometimes, and B, it's just, you know, if you get in trouble, you're too far from land.
Yeah.
And I
don't know much about sub-level geography, but I know a lot of those places are volcanic in origin, and I don't know how deep trenches and stuff are out there.
Yeah, the Straits of Malacca are 500 feet deep. If you go another 10 or 15 miles to the west, it gets to be a mile deep, 5,000 feet deep. And a mile deep is deep enough that if the plane went down intact, it might be a while before stuff floats to the surface. And it could be that the transponders, or the beepers, the black boxes that are beeping a signal, are so far down that you can't detect that signal unless you drop a probe 1,000 feet down from a ship and drag it looking for it. It's one of the problems that they used to have when submarines would vanish, you know, deep in the ocean, and you couldn't find them. You know, it's just and airplanes are not equipped with. You have to go to what's called ELF, very low frequency radiation. That's what submarines use. You know, 50, 30, 50, 90 hertz, very low frequencies to ping out. And airplanes don't do that. They ping in the megahertz region, which, you know, has a real hard time penetrating water. Diana, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service coming up next. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Bob, of course, the former member of the U.S. House of Representatives and author of the brilliant book about how Washington works, Sideswiped. Hey, Bob, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today? It's the third anniversary of Fukushima. We talked about that. They haven't figured out what's going on with the plane yet, have they?
Mm-hmm. They haven't. It made a U-turn. The transponder stopped working. That's about as much as they know.
Uh-huh.
But this has turned into NSA Security Day on Capitol Hill.
Uh-huh.
In a larger-than-life way, on the heels of Eric Snowden Skyping into a, you know, conference and making some statements, the federal judge has said that to the NSA, you will destroy no documents from the last 5 years, information you've gathered. So the federal judge has blocked the NSA from destroying anything for the last 5 years. Now, this is U.S. District Judge Jeffrey White out of San Francisco, and he's overseeing the invasion of privacy lawsuit against the agency. But
whose lawsuit?
This,
whose lawsuit?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Who filed the lawsuit?
Oh, it was I believe it was just a citizen filing it for invasion of privacy.
Okay.
It was filed by, I'm trying to remember, I'm sorry off the top of my head, but I don't think it was a group. I think it was a citizen.
Okay.
And I could be wrong on that, but I'll try to find out.
Okay.
On the heels of this, and this is not the NSA, but the CIA, the big news today is the fact that Senator Senator Feinstein has made an out-and-out accusation, and of course she's a Democratic member from California.
Of the Intelligence Committee.
Yes.
She has oversight over the NSA and CIA.
Everything. And a long-standing, respected member, and she has made a statement, and she's not a Snowden fan, by the way.
So no, she's a real hawk, actually, in many regards.
She is. And she has made the statement that the CIA went into a congressionally created computer system separate from the members of Congress's system that they tie into that was actually monitoring the torture and the detainees, you know, all the scenario about the interrogations that were done. And Brennan has said that the head of the CIA has said, no, we absolutely did not do that. We did not hack the congressional system. And she says, yes, you did.
I wonder if one of their contractors did and just didn't bother to tell them.
Well, you know, that's a possibility. But as I was talking to somebody today up on the Hill, and there's no way Senator Feinstein would just, you know, she's not a wild card that would come out and just say something like this.
Right.
Information's been brought to her. And what they did, the CIA basically said, well, you know, the congressional staff kind of went overboard with things, but they really didn't. They were allowed through a deal agreement with the CIA and the Congress to go in and to gather information, millions of documents, looking at the interrogation tactics, the torture, the whole Bush era, you know, Alberto Gonzalez nightmare that occurred.
Right.
And now they have found out somehow electronically, I think from the congressional side, that in fact the CIA went in after the congressional staffers got certain information, received it, and eliminated that information and took it out. So, you know, it could be a contractor, but, you know, if it's the CIA itself and they approve that, and the White House is basically saying, look, this has been turned over to the Inspector General, who, by the way, has turned this over to the Justice Department. So, Tom, this thing is going
This is a real interesting cascade of watching the watchers, because so you start out with the NSA, CIA maybe committing crimes with regard to torture. Congress is tasked with oversight of them. So Congress says, we're going to watch you. We want to know what's going on. So the NSA, CIA put together, or the CIA in this case, puts together a report on what we did, and they give it to Congress. And then Congress starts looking at that report going, hey, wait a minute, there's some really nasty stuff here. And then the allegation is that the CIA then went into Congress's computers and said, wait a minute, maybe we gave you more information than we should have. And so it's like, what, the watchers watching the watchers watching the watchers watching the it's like walking into Alice's mirrors.
And yes, and speaking of Alice, Alice Fisher was one of the people who, for Chertoff, and she was a Bush administration era hatchet attorney, as I call her, with Gonzalez, and she, in fact, had suppressed information and had turned her head as the FBI brought her items in the Justice Department. So, you know, this has been going on for quite a while, of manipulation by agencies of information and deciding what to give to Congress or not.
All in the pursuit of CYA.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so this one, I think, is very interesting because I don't think this one goes away. Now, Senator Lindsey Graham, I should note, says, you know, somebody should go to jail for this. Well, that's pretty good. They still haven't taken the people that lied on weapons of mass destruction to jail.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you're going to get that political side, but this is not political from Senator
If you get
Feinstein.
Lindsey Graham and Senator Feinstein together, I mean, could this not be the start of a new church commission?
Yes, I think it potentially could, because this is a biggie.
Yeah, this is. I've been calling for this for 5 years. I mean, we need a new church committee. We need Congress to actually use their oversight power. Anyhow, Bob, we just have a minute left. Other things going on in the world that we need to know about?
Well, of course, the Ukraine. Putin's still in the driver's seat. We have said that we won't meet with him, but I frankly don't think that the Russians are as concerned about that. They're in a negotiating process with the European Union is what they're doing.
Right.
And now, of course, some of the people in the Crimea have gotten a hold of whips. They use whips for some reason against each other. And they're pro-Russian people, and some of them are taking to the streets. So it's
getting nasty.
Yes, and I don't think there's much we can do. We've said we won't meet with him. I think that's a given.
What's our strategic interest in that area?
I just think that Well, I mean, I don't think we have the strategic interest that...
I get it. Putin has one. He's got a third of his fleet, you know, stationed in Crimea. But I don't see what our strategic interest is, other than messing in his business.
The European Union has, because that's the buffer between Russia and they. But as far as us, I think it's just for the good of the order. You know, we're expected to stand up for, you know, what's right.
Pax Americana. We are the empire.
We're supposed to.
I guess. Okay.
Not invade.
Bob Ney. Yeah, indeed. Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, author of Sideswipe. Get it and read it. It's amazing. And brought to you by GhostForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Great talking to you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome to our third hour. And, you know, it's becoming clearer and clearer. I don't know if you saw this piece in Salon. Some really good reporting. It's becoming clearer by the day that Texas Governor Rick Perry killed an innocent man. 10 years ago, Texas executed Cameron Todd Willingham, who was convicted in 1992 on arson charges. The complaint was that he had set a 1991 fire in Corsicana, Texas, that killed his three children. But now newly uncovered evidence suggests that Willingham, who maintained his innocence until his death, was in fact an innocent man. Willingham's original conviction relied on two major pieces of evidence, an analysis of the fire by arson investigators and the testimony of a jailhouse informant. And in the years since Willingham was executed, the arson investigation that was the key pillar of his case has been totally discredited. Questions have been raised over the analysis done by the arson investigators and the science that was used in the case. It now looks like it was just a tragic house fire. And as for the jailhouse informant who allegedly overheard Willingham confess to the crime, new evidence suggests that that informant was offered a deal by the prosecution in return for his testimony. The judge had earlier denied cutting a deal, but now the deal's been found, and it's in the judge's own handwriting. So it's looking increasingly more like Rick Perry executed an innocent man, and not just an innocent man, a father who discovered his house on fire and was unable to save his three daughters, who was grieving and distraught, and was then thrown in jail and accused of intentionally burning his own house down to kill his kids, which he almost certainly didn't do. He was just a grieving father who's now been killed by Rick Perry. That's pretty grisly. But even worse, there's more and more proof that the death penalty itself does not even work to keep people from killing other people. Proponents of the death penalty say that, you know, well, it's not perfect. It's a strong deterrent to murder. They're wrong. In fact, it's the other way around. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, between 1990 and 2010, 20-year block of time, the murder rate in states that didn't have the death penalty was consistently lower than the murder rate in states that do have the death penalty. According to a 2009 survey, the world's leading criminologists, 88% say that the death penalty does not lower homicide rates. Meanwhile, according to Amnesty International, more than 130 death row inmates have been released because of wrongful convictions since 1973. A guy named Seth Penalver is one of those 103. Penalver was arrested in 1994 for murdering three people. There was no physical evidence linking him to the murders, and only other evidence, and the only other evidence the police had was a poor quality video that they said showed Penalver. Penalver was ultimately released in 2012 after he was acquitted of all charges. It turns out the police were wrong. He was innocent. But the state of Florida nearly killed him and would have if newly discovered evidence hadn't led to a new trial. But frankly, we shouldn't even need facts or statistics or wrongful conviction stories to prove that the death penalty is wrong. I mean, here's the bottom line. As a society, when we kill people, we become killers ourselves. We coarsen our society. We become accustomed to murder, albeit murder by state. It's still murder. Rick Perry is on the record saying that Cameron Todd Willingham was a monster. But it's increasingly looking like Rick Perry is the real monster. Not only has he put a likely innocent man to death, he's continuing the use of an inhumane and immoral process that doesn't even meet its own goals. We in America, Americans have always talked about, I mean, all the way back to Pastor What's-His-Name, you know, the Pilgrim Pastor, that we should be a shining city upon the hill. He actually said a city on the hill. Reagan added shining to it. But in any case, and Kennedy quoted him. Not Reagan, but he quoted the Pilgrim minister, whose name I can't remember. But anyhow, but we can't possibly be that. We can't possibly be seen that way by the world or even by ourselves if we continue perpetrating state-operated murder. The eyes of the world are on us. We should be leading by example. And if we're going to do that, we need to get rid of the death penalty once and for all. Okay, so that's topic one. Topic two, a great piece in today's Financial Times by Andrew Smithers. It's titled, A World Awash with Debt. The net of which is that we need to stop the policy that Ronald Reagan started in the mid-1980s of allowing CEOs to be paid with stock. Because of that, CEOs are having corporations do all kinds of things. The most recent is that they're borrowing money to buy their own stock back so that the stock becomes more concentrated and thus more valuable so that the CEOs can cash in their stock options at a higher profit, at make more money off the stock options. Screws the customers, screws the economy. Screws the company. Instead of investing in the business, instead of growing the business, they're simply jacking up the stock price because they're paid with stock. We need to put an end to this. Go back to the rules we had before the Reagan Revolution, where the only way that you can pay an employee of a company is with dollars. I actually wrote a chapter about this in my book, Rebooting the American Dream. It's a big deal. That and Reagan's tax cuts were some of the greatest crimes that this guy perpetrated against the economy of the United States that to this day are setting us up for the crash of 2016 or maybe 2015 or maybe even 2014. And, you know, here it is in today's Financial Times, a couple of shocking things. Andrew Smithers says, I illustrate the situation in the U.S. in the chart above. And he says, non-financial business debt is higher than it has ever been since the Second World War and well above its level in 1929. It was 56% of GDP in 1929. Now it's 80% of GDP. Non-financial business debt. He said the underlying position seems worse than this as companies have shifted so much of their debt off balance sheet. By the way, other countries are just as bad, especially the UK. You know, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, same stuff. Then he says, when governments ran large deficits, the private sector has a cash surplus and can repay its debts. Now, why would he say that? Because the government debt is savings in the private sector. It's private sector cash. The larger the government debt, the larger the private sector debt, cash. so companies can pay their debts. But instead, he again, Andrew Smithers writes, unfortunately, this has not happened this time around. This time around, he's talking about the cycle between 1929 and today. In the UK and the US, the reasons are quite simple. Companies have been leveraging up, in other words, they've been borrowing money to buy back their stock, their equity, buying back equity, he says. The latest figures show UK companies buying back equity at an annual rate of 3% of GDP and the US at 2.3%. So why would they be doing this? He says claims are often made that today's low investment, companies are not investing in growing their business. They're not creating jobs. Why? He says people say it's because of deleveraging. In other words, the companies are trying to get out of debt. He says this is nonsense. The figures published on March 6th by the U.S. Federal Reserve show that corporate debt has risen by 9% over the last year. What's actually going on, Smithers says, and I quote, companies in the U.K. and the U.S. prefer to buy back shares rather than invest in equipment. Why? Because their managements are paid huge bonuses, which are boosted by buybacks and this held back by investment. In other words, CEOs make more money when their company borrows money and buys its own stock than they do when their company invests in new products. This is insane. And it's setting up a crash.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's like T.S. Eliot, you know, this is the way the world shall end, not with a bang, but a whimper. And most people are unaware of this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Curtis watching Free Speech TV in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Curtis, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, Curtis.
Appreciate you guys so much for speaking up about what Reagan has done.
Oh.
My year started out with 61. I was about 18 in California at the time that Reagan took governorship there.
Whoa. So you saw him as a governor as well as a president. Most people didn't do, you know, it's like Californians were trying to warn us.
Yeah, I was in Florida at the time he was trying to become the president, and nobody was going to listen to me in the South. So
yeah,
I was kind of walled off there.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But I really appreciate you guys getting the word out. Proposition 13 is where it started at within the state of California with him.
Yeah.
And he just crushed all my friends' small businesses and taxed everybody to kingdom come, basically.
Yeah, he raised taxes on working people and small businesses and dropped taxes on rich people and big corporations. Massive.
Well, part of President Carter's CEDAR program, remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was able to work at that at 18, and it was going really well until he became president again.
Yeah.
Until he got booted out and Reagan got in there.
Yeah.
He immediately crushed all those programs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had hired, Louise and I were running a community for abused kids in New Hampshire at that time. And we had hired a fellow on the CETA program in 79, or maybe early 1980, and then, you know, Reagan came in 81,
and that
was it.
Yep. Yeah, as far as the pricing and this index of the profit margins these companies are calling that they're getting, it's a matter of reducing the amount of product that people are purchasing.
What do you mean?
That you used to buy 600 napkins for $4.
Right.
Now you get $4.50. So they reduce the amount of product you get for the same amount of money.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Candy bar used to be 6 ounces, then it went to 5 ounces. Now they're 3.5 ounces. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the real game's coming into play with their profit margins.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're definitely, I mean, corporations right now are more profitable than they've ever been. And
right.
They are more in debt than, and they're more in debt than they've ever been. And they're going into debt just to buy back their own stock. And the only reason they're buying back their stock is because the senior executives who are compensated with stock will make more money. And that's no way to run a business. You don't run a business for the benefit of 15 people at the top.
Right. Exactly. I don't understand where they're going to end this. Like you said, probably with a whimper.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to be a crash.
Where they're heading with it for sure.
Yep. I think so. I do think so.
And as far as France and their nuclear energy and their plants along that river, the fact that they've kept that news out of the world to know that that river almost dried up and those 17 plants would have just gone boom.
Wait a minute. What? Tell me which way you're talking about. The Seine? The what river in France is
this? I'm not sure which river they're on, but there were, I believe, 17 plants or 7 plants along that one river, and it almost dried up completely in France.
Wow. Yeah.
You guys might want to research that a little bit, but yeah,
I was unaware of that. And when was this last summer?
I believe last summer or 2 years back, even.
Yeah.
But I mean, they've kept that out of the news. I mean, that makes Fukushima look not serious compared to what could have happened there.
Well, people don't realize that one of the largest consumers of water in the world, I mean, in the United
right,
States
exactly.
and all the developed world, are not just nuclear power plants, although they're huge. But nuclear power plants, coal power plants, oil power plants, and gas power plants, they all require cooling water. And they throw off an enormous amount of waste heat. And it screws the environment. It uses up fresh water. I mean, we need to, solar panels do not consume water. So, Curtis, thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Aaron in Seattle, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Aaron, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to talk about aliens and religion.
Oh, great. We and for people who just tuned in previous hours, we were a caller called in and said he thought that the missing airplane was taken by aliens. And I said, are you serious? And he was like, yeah. And then a bunch of people called in and said, maybe. And I pointed out that Ronald Reagan had said four different occasions, wouldn't it be nice if there were aliens? We'd fight with them instead of each other. And it might be one of the few things that I agree with Reagan about. So back to you, Aaron.
Yeah, I actually am with the previous caller. I have been suspecting that it was aliens as well.
Really?
And, yes. And I also... I'm a follower of the ancient aliens theory and believe that aliens have been visiting us for thousands of years.
The Eric von Däniken Charity of the Gods stuff.
Yeah.
I remember reading that back in the, it came out in the 80s or the 70s? And that was pretty compelling stuff. Yeah.
I think it was the 80s. And there's the Book of Enoch, which was actually omitted from the Old Testament in the popular Bible that, you know, most Americans are familiar with. And there's also he's not really brand new, but there's a man by the name of Marshall Vian Summers, who is, he's actually, I think he's from Colorado, but he claims to be the messenger of God, basically, and he's been receiving this message since the 80s. It's been going on for 30 years now, and it's essentially a warning to humanity that aliens are among us, and we need to unite as the human family to fight against this force.
Is he with the lizard people theory of David David Icke's? No, that's
no.
a different. That's a whole different strain.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing. There's no sort of disclosure as far as who these beings are that are here. It's basically there are the alliances of humanity, which are other alien forces, essentially,
mm-hmm.
that are not here to intervene. They're essentially speaking through this man just to warn us of how we can fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And it essentially boils down to just, connecting with your spirituality and inner knowledge. So there's this book called The Steps to Knowledge that people are advised to read if you're a follower of this.
Hmm.
And it basically doesn't discount any religion. It sort of encompasses all religions.
Mm-hmm.
So I urge anyone who believes in aliens and is spiritual and believes in God and, you know, a greater creator or something to look into it because it's pretty compelling stuff.
Check out the Enoch stuff.
It sort of resonates. As soon as you start to read it, there is a website called alieninvasion.org, which I believe is maintained by this man. Again, it's Marshall Vian Summers and the website with the new message. All of this information is available for free. It's I believe it's just newmessage.org.
Okay. All right.
So I just recently found it and just started looking into it. It looks like some of these websites that are alien invasion.
Yeah,
site
fascinating
really
stuff. Aaron, I want to move along and get a few other people in here, but thank you for sharing that with us. I don't know. Charles in Bracy, Virginia, you have proof of aliens? Charles, you are on the air. Charles is listening to his television instead of his phone. Susan in Wana, Washington. They tried.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to kind of touch on the homelessness that you had mentioned in the earlier hours.
Sure.
I don't know if you're aware of the redistribution of the mentally ill and the homelessness that's occurring in this great USA.
Okay. Tell me.
Basically, they have laws, really sick laws, although on a former show you had talked about Reagan having let go of the mentally ill. It was actually Nixon who signed those documents.
Okay.
But it has to do with these newer 16-bed facilities because they don't want the mentally ill necessarily having to go into restrictiveness within the actual jails.
Mm-hmm.
So they put them in these 16-bed facilities, and if you have insurance, they bill to the gills max on your insurance policy.
Sure.
I have one for about $17,000 currently.
Whoa.
Like, if I wasn't depressed already, you know, now I have all these lovely bills coming in.
Right.
They also, while you're there, have you sign off in the state of Washington, RCW 770 and RCW 2650.010. And basically, they can do electroshock therapy to you.
Holy cow.
Even if you're dating on the 2650.010, that one, even if you're dating, that person can sign your documents on your behalf.
Even if you're not married.
Yeah, even if you're not married. It's called the principal has a dating relationship as defined in the 26.50.
You know, one of the things I've observed over the years, Susan, is that people with mental illness have fewer rights than, you know, once somebody is classified as being mentally ill, they lose, it seems to me that they lose a lot of rights under law. And I have scratched my head about that for a long, long time.
Made as allegations later against you.
Yeah.
Further thing, and Danielle even knew about this, and you really need to do a lot more for Danielle. Maybe you could take her to breakfast or dinner. But getting back on
topic, do our best.
I don't know if you're aware, and I don't know if it's just strictly because a lot of where I live in this rural homelands of swinging into the 7-Eleven or the Walmart, but they sell Greyhound bus tickets, and they're redistributing the mentally ill and the homeless people. If you live in a big city, they take you to a smaller city. If you live in a small city, they take you to a bigger city. And this is all FACOFTA. I mean,
right. Yeah, it sounds pretty awful. Susan, thank you for the call. Thanks for the heads up on that, the alert. And it is a topic we should talk about more frequently. 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
There's an old truism that you can tell a lot about a country by how they treat the least among them. And it's not looking good for the United States right now. 1-800-FREEDOM. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Virginia just vanished. Vi in Donovan, Missouri. Hey, Vi, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to make one comment about Reagan. And he fixed Social Security all right. Remember the fix Social Security fix?
Yeah, he doubled our Social Security taxes
right.
and put a cap on it so rich people didn't have to pay.
Well, not only that, they fixed it. I'm a widow. And I have an aggressive form of degenerative disc disease. It's in my back. It's in my spine. And it's in a knee. I am unable to work.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I did not get ill in the time frame that I that would make me eligible for my deceased husband's Social Security benefits. And they say I haven't worked long enough because so I'm living on savings. So that's what, and I guess whenever that when that runs out, I guess I sell my home and then I, you know, rent and hopefully can make it until whenever. But I'm almost been over with the arthritis. Yeah, I walk with quad cane, and that really fixed Social Security.
Well, I am so sorry to hear that. Let me just share some statistics with you that, and with our audience. We have in the United States right now, in large part as a consequence of 32 years of Reaganomics, a $6.8 trillion retirement deficit in the United States, $6.8 trillion. Last year, 2013, $8 trillion, in other words, more than that, $8 trillion in new wealth was created. Almost all of it went to the top 10%, and most of it went to the top 1%. It did not go to fix the retirement deficit. The median retirement fund for upper middle class, these are people making more than $60,000 a year, upper middle class 50 to 64-year-olds, the median amount of money that they have in the bank for their retirement is $6,500. People are not ready to retire in this country. 93% of us gained zero wealth. In the past year, 93% of Americans actually lost wealth on average. No, this is since 2008. 93% of Americans lost wealth, whereas the richest 12,000 families in America earned $100,000 a day during that period of time. The richest 0.1% each made $40 million last year, each of them. You know, the 10 states in the United States pay corporate subsidies. You know, Walmart comes in and says, give us some free land and we'll put a store here. Or Volkswagen comes in and says, we'll build a factory if you give us, you know, some cash. 10 states paid in corporate subsidies twice the cost of all the nation's pensions. David K. Johnson calls this nothing short of theft. People have 401ks. Reagan, this was another invention of during the Reagan administration, moving out of pensions and into you manage your own money, what are called defined contribution plans rather than defined benefit plans. Out of over a 30-year period, out of every dollar that you put in your 401k, 40 cents of it ends up going to the banks as a fee. 40 cents out of every dollar. The amount of money, the approximate amount of wealth that black families have in America, for every $100 of wealth that a white family has, a black family has $2 worth. $2, not 20, two. And almost 10% of the underserved households' retirement money goes for financial fees. So this is people making less than $25,000 a year. They, on average, spend, a family with an annual income of $25,500 a year spends an average of $2,400 just on fees and interest because they have to bank with a banking system that like the payday lenders or, you know, they don't have an account with the bank. So they have to pay these outrageous fees. It's 10% of their income is just going to bank fees, whereas people with an income, you know, of over $100,000 typically pay nothing on bank fees because the banks give them services. I mean, it's mind-boggling. So, Vi, I know those weren't not depressing numbers, but thank you for calling and sharing your story with us and giving me an opportunity to share those.
I'm not at a very pleasant place in my life. I really am not.
I get it, and you are joined by millions of Americans, and it's a terrible thing. Bye.
Thanks for listening.
You're welcome.
Program so much.
Thank you, and thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. This is Vi's story is the story literally of millions of Americans, and what's our response as a nation? Let's spend another $100 billion on a war in Afghanistan or Iraq, or let's get ready for a war in Ukraine? I mean, enough. Evelina in Santa Rosa, California, listening on KBBF. Hey, Evelina, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thank you. I'm going to be a little bit off topic, but I'm hoping that you'll do some research for me, and maybe you can address this on another program.
Okay.
I was reading on Russia Today Español, because we're a bilingual radio station, that they're considering removing Hampton from the map as a Florida state because of being an extremely corrupt city?
Yeah, this is a city of 477 people. It's one of the top 10 most forwarded emails in the New York Times right now. I read this in the subway on my way over here this morning, and this town has been taking in lots and lots of money from their radar gun because the state highway goes right through 1,000 feet of the town, and they nail people for not slowing down that 10 miles an hour, and they've made a fortune, and it's been used very corruptly. Back to you.
And I understand that the mayor is now in jail because of possibly suspected of soliciting OxyContin, selling drugs, and can't pay his bail. I'm wondering, what is the history of wiping out cities like that for corruption? And could it, if it hasn't been done, could it set precedents of wiping out other cities when they decide? It would be nice to know what the historical context of cities being removed from states that way.
I think that this is requiring an act of the legislature. My recollection, and I only read the article once, and I read it admittedly on the subway. I wasn't taking notes. I do have a printout of it here with me, but it's not marked up. But my recollection was that the state legislature is trying to basically disincorporate the city. And although it might be the AG's office, I'd have to go back and read it. But it's not easy to unincorporate a city. But if you want to see massive theft from a city, look at Detroit. There you've got but this took a law passed by the legislature to give the governor the power in the state of Michigan. Rick Snyder got the Republicans in the legislature to give him this power. The citizens, by referendum, all voted to take the power away from him, and the legislature passed another bill giving him the power again in a way that couldn't be removed by the citizens. And with that power, he appointed a corporate lawyer and to take over the city of Detroit and sell off its assets to rich folks and screw the poor people there. And that's an ongoing process, and it's something that they had done before that in Benton Harbor and Flint and other cities, mostly largely black cities and cities where it was difficult for the people to rise up and fight back. But Evelina, thank you for the tip. I will have to do a little more research, and I'll get back to you on it. Thanks for the call. Sanchez in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Sanchez, what's up?
A very groovacious day to you, Dr. Hartman.
Well, thank you. Groovacious. I always learn new words from you, Sanchez. What's up?
Well, yeah, you used to be a DJ, and you know what a groovacious...
that kind of groovacious. Sure, I do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, I wanted to offer some quick addenda to some of the Fukushima comments that Kevin Camps was saying in your previous segment.
Yes.
But every time anybody ever talks about David Icke and the lizard people, it's such a fascinating topic. I just wanted to ask a quick question, if I may.
Please.
Do you happen to know if lizard people suffer from reptile dysfunction?
I don't know. That's a good one. That's a good one, Sanchez.
Well, anyway, on to the main topic here.
Yes.
Kevin Camps was discussing a couple of things. First of all, a thing that no one is discussing about Fukushima is that Japan, another reason why they're wanting to start up all the nuclear reactors once again, and that, so another one of the reasons why they imposed the state secrets law, is to get all the negative information and advertising and negative propaganda off the table,
right,
so that they could restart these things, because Japan is in the third year of a negative trade balance for shelling out for all of those fossil fuels in order to keep those the generators going.
Right.
So that's one of the primary concerns that no one ever discusses when we have these conversations. So I thought I'd bring that.
Yeah, Japan, what they should have, their response to Fukushima should have been, tomorrow morning, 3 years ago, we are going to start a program to solarize this country, to put solar panels on the roof of every house in this country, to use geothermal where it's available, to use wave power where it's available, to use wind power. They've got a lot of it. And they could, 3 years down the road, they could have transformed their economy and their nation, and they didn't. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
3 years in, they have a trade deficit from importing oil and coal to run power plants that they had to reactivate that had been decommissioned because of nuclear. And it's a real bizarre situation. Sanchez, thank you a lot for the call. And thanks for listening to KPFK there in Los Angeles. We'll be back in just a moment. That, by the way, the seven numbers that I was sharing with, was it Vi who called earlier and was talking about, how difficult it is to retire in America now? That was from a piece by Paul Buchheit, Buchheit, that was published in Alternet back on March 2nd, if you wanted to look it up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The title of the article, and I've been meaning to share it with you for a while, was Seven Numbers That Show How Most Americans Were Robbed of a Comfortable Retirement. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Free Speech TV, by the way, is in their fundraising drive. This is the last opportunity I'm going to have today to mention it to you. If you have an opportunity, if you're watching Free Speech TV, if you're listening on one of our Pacifica stations and they're in a fund drive, by all means, call them right now. and contribute. Or even if they're not in a fund drive, you can go to their website and contribute. Same thing with Free Speech TV, which is in a fund drive right now. Freespeech.org or 877-378-8669. And you know, give them a call and say, yes, I'd like to contribute. I'd like to be part of Free Speech TV. That said, speaking of Free Speech TV, Sue in New Eagle, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Sue, what's up?
Are you talking to me, Tom?
I am. It says here you wanted to talk about the death penalty.
Yes, but I'm in Morgan.
Oh, okay.
So
apparently
apparently
the computer thinks it reads your phone number, your zip code or something. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, sorry about
that. I'm glad you had a working vacation. You never stop. And I hope you and your lovely bride are doing well and the rest of the family, too.
We are. The first day back was a little bit of a shock. It's like, oh, my God, back to work? Really? But I love my work, so and so does Louise.
I know.
So we're having a good time.
And we love you, I debated and went to the state championship in debating at Penn State College, as a matter of fact, in 1965-66. My partner and I were the con on the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And the information existed 50 years ago.
Yep.
Okay. And we had to prove this.
Well, if I may interrupt, Sue, back in 1965, there was a very active and aggressive anti-death penalty movement in the United States, and it went by the name of the Right to Life Movement. And that name was co-opted from the anti-death penalty movement in 1974 as the anti-abortion movement took form and took power after Roe v. Wade in 73, and they started calling themselves Right to Life either in 74 or 75, rebranding themselves. And the anti-death penalty folks were like, wait a minute, that's us. But they just got drowned out. Back to you.
That's true. The other thing is that the facts are still true today about the death penalty. More people are put to death who are innocent than who are guilty. It was known 50 years ago. Number two, it costs more to put a person to death than it does to give them a life sentence.
Right.
And that's because of the number of times that they can appeal.
Well, plus the facilities that they use to hold death penalty inmates cost $100,000 to $150,000 per person per year instead of the normal, you know, $40,000
exactly.
per year for the general population inmates.
Exactly. So this is old news. This is not new news, but we don't correct these things.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I used to be very proud to call myself an American. But I'm not proud of it anymore. We're just not moving forward. We're just harming on so many levels. I'm proud of you and what you do. And thank you.
Well, thank you, sir.
And your staff.
And I'm proud of you. Thank you for listening and thank you for your kind comments. You know, I think that we've done some good. And historically, we've done a lot of good. If you look at what the New Deal did, if you look at the Great Society, I think that, you know, we've actually... I think we can do good again. Thank you, Sue. Occupying the Media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Harbin here with you. And Doug in St. Peter's, Missouri, listening on TuneIn. Is that Progressive Voices, Doug?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Doug, what's up?
You've got the memory stick. So I remember when they had CIA, one of their top people who destroyed the video files of the prisoners in Gitmo that were undergoing their enhanced interrogation, their
yes.
torture.
Yes.
And was that under the Obama administration?
No.
Because if it was.
That was during
okay.
the Bush administration.
Okay. Well, I mean, still, I don't remember anything happening to him at all.
Nothing happened to anybody, to the best of my knowledge.
Which is what I think will happen on this one as well.
Well, we'll see. I you know, I think that when you get Dianne Feinstein and Senator Graham, Lindsey Graham, seriously PO'd, you know, I've been calling for a new church committee, a new, you know, for the Senate to investigate this stuff. And I hope that that's what happens. You may be right, Doug. You're a little more cynical than me, I suspect. Well, maybe I should share that cynicism. But, you know, I think that if enough of us put pressure on the Senate, call your senators right now. Every one of us has two. Actually, I live in D.C. I don't have any, but most people have two. Doug, thank you for the call. Call your senators and say, it's time to investigate what's going on. I mean, if these guys are hacking Congress, and they're hacking us, too. It's like, is this really America? Kristen in Alamo, Nevada.
Yes.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hello. I'm so glad to be talking to you.
Thank you.
This is such a treat.
Thank you. You wanted to talk about Reagan?
I want to talk about several things, but I guess I can only talk about Reagan.
Yeah, pick one.
Not good. Okay. Not good. I'm a speech-language pathologist, special educator, retired. And I understand also about them shipping people out, mental patients. They've been doing it in Clark County. It kills me. I'm a Nevadan. And I can't believe that's happening to these precious people. I can't. Yeah. But anyway, back to Reagan.
And they use vagrancy laws and trespassing laws to do it.
Oh, well, I've been fighting for this for years. My husband and I have been married 58 years. And we are involved in what's happening in this country and have been for so many years.
Good on you.
And the thing that scares me the most is the lack of caring. I guess I love people. I was very active in my party in Nevada, and I find this very scary because I do not know how we are going to change that no matter what we say, because so many things are covered up. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Well,
Reagan doing this.
One of the things that drives this, Kristen, is you get these, quote, leaders like Paul Ryan who basically come out and say, kids who get school lunches don't feel loved, and therefore we should cut off school lunches. Just this bizarre stuff, just absolutely bizarre stuff. And, Reagan really started this in 1980 when he was running for president. He would tell this story when he went around the country, and keep in mind his first political speech when he was running for president was in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers were violently murdered. And he talked about states' rights. But he would give this speech where he would say, doesn't it upset you? Now, he's talking to white audiences, white, largely middle class, working class, blue collar audiences. He'd say, doesn't it upset you when you're at the supermarket and you want to buy some hamburger and you're standing in line to check out and some young buck is in front of you using food stamps to buy a T-bone steak? Now, this is almost a word-for-word quote from Reagan in the 80s. And, of course, young buck was Reagan talk for a young African-American. And this was just race stuff. After a couple of months and after getting called out on it a few times, Reagan started saying some young guy. But everybody knew what he was saying. Everybody knew that speech. And that, over time, morphed into his welfare queen stuff and all this other stuff. And he would use that racial politics to cause people to say, yeah, that's terrible, and so we shouldn't have food stamps, and I don't want my tax dollars going to the government to go support, lazy, poor people of color. And so then Reagan would say to them, government doesn't do anything good except to transfer your money to these people that you don't like, so let's get rid of it. And the real agenda with the let's get rid of it, let's starve the government, is let's cut taxes on rich people, which is the principal way, 90% of Reaganomics, 90% of what Reagan did was cut taxes on rich people and corporations and shift that tax burden onto the middle class and working poor. And he was very, very successful in doing that. And these white working class people are just going along voting, yes, I'm a Reagan Democrat now. I'm going to vote for Ronnie Reagan. And to this day, they're doing this kind of, race-based politics. Now they call it voter fraud, and they're talking about those Hispanics, right? And it's like, at some point, you would hope that Americans would wake up.
See, that's exactly. This is, as an educator, but as a human being, and as somebody who cares so damn much, I'm sorry, I shouldn't swear.
Okay.
I cannot understand why people aren't awake. But you hit on it so beautifully. You said so many things are not put on the air. They're owned by corporations.
Yeah.
It is no longer a people. This is the people station. This is a station you can call into and say, this is what I feel. This is what's occurring. This is how many years I've worked to change this. Mm-hmm. And why aren't we changing?
Yeah. Well, and to a large extent, the reason that we're not changing, I mean, in some ways we are, and there are some great voices out there. You'll hear Bernie on Friday. But to the extent that we're not changing, it's because we've become an oligonomy, an oligarch-run economy, and that has now morphed into our politics because the Citizens United and the Supreme Court, we've become an oligarchy, and which is not a healthy form of governance. Kristen, thank you so much for the call and for caring, for being an activist. We all need to be activists. You need to be an activist. This is what I do for a living. Check out the websites of some of the great activist groups out there. MoveOn.org, PDAmerica.org, MoveToAmend.org. Show up. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.